Today is July the 6th, 2023. I'm Jen Wyden with the Jeffersonville Township Public Library conducting interviews for Some Like It Hot, Tales from the Firehouse. I'm here today with Fire Marshal Jeffrey Lovin of the Jeffersonville Fire Department. Thank you for being here.
Yes, I'm glad to be here.
So everyone has a story to tell, and I wanted to give firefighters a chance to tell some of their stories. So how long have you been with the department?
Coming up on the end of this month will be my completion of my 14th year. So
what made you want to become a firefighter?
Well, I knew a lot about the career, and when I graduated from Indiana University was like the economic downturn of 2007, 2009. So the job market was just like so-so. So I experienced that for a couple years, and then the city was growing, and I knew that they were going to do a big hiring wave because they were going to add two new fire stations. And always kind of knew in the back of my mind, my parents really wanted me to get a degree, but I survived and got one, but I knew how good of a job the fire department would be with my personality, kind of a real blue-collar background. I always worked construction and did things like that and got my hands dirty every summer of college. And, you know, growing up, I worked with a lot of firemen on their off days doing heating and air, building, you know, additions for people, pouring concrete. And I really just liked that aspect of not being confined to a desk or doing something that was like the 9-to-5. I knew what the schedule entailed with growing up with my dad and how much time, you know, he might miss Christmas, but he might have a couple days off during the week when I was on out of school. So
your dad was a firefighter as well?
Yeah, retired. He did 32, 33 years, retired battalion chief. So the pros and cons, the pros definitely outweighed the cons, and there was a definite draw where, you know, growing up playing sports and things like that, you had that, like, team atmosphere and in college I lived with a bunch of guys in a house, and it was almost like an extension. Like I really just kind of fell in love with that whole idea of continuing that lifestyle, really.
Oh, it's just like another family.
It is. And I knew a lot of people, and people's sons were kind of getting into it, and obviously, you had a path of retirement that was tangible and not just like, oh, well, if you just save and do this, or if you invest, you know, there was a pension that you know, you're going to have to be conservative when we walk out of here, but there is something at the end of the, and, you know, if my goals and aspirations really weren't, I didn't think, oh, I'm going to go to college and I want to be a millionaire. I want to make, you know, and do that. I just wanted a stable career, obviously helping people, and coming back to a community that I always had a really good relationship with, growing up downtown and then kind of moving on the outskirts town and then seeing the city grow. And with my large family, I really didn't want to move too far away.
Right.
You know, I got a taste of, you know, I met a lot of great friends and things outside of Jeff, but I really love, and I would always bring people home, like for Derby and Thunder, and I would always say the city of Jeff really has the best of both worlds. You can be in a small town, you can 20 minutes from being away in the country, you know, if you want to go do that lifestyle, or you can go across the bridge and have a nice nightlife or restaurants, and it's just the best of both worlds that I feel like Jeffersonville's always offered, and I kind of liked tapping into that and coming back here, and just a nice cost of living, you know?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
I had friends that moved to Indy, and they were like, they were cutting their leg off to get a house, you know, in a certain neighborhood and things like that, and you know, my older siblings were having kids as I was graduating, and I was like, you know, I just wanted to be around my family.
Are any of your siblings firefighters?
No. My sister's husband is. So, But my brother he writes for the Associated Press. So yeah, he moved away and then got on with the Associated Press branch in the Courier Journal building. So he's done really well with that.
So how many Lovins have been or are firefighters? Do you know? I know your dad was.
So my dad, then my dad's sister's husband is a retired chief, Mike Smith. And then we have Eric Lovin, my first cousin. Then that would be just the Lovin side. My mom was a Knight, and they all grew up on 7th Street.
Yep.
Corky Knight, retired. Then my mom's sister, Dale Pop, married Teresa, my mom's sister. He's retired. And I think that's
Isn't his son a firefighter?
His son is a firefighter. He is probably got 5 or 6 years on now, Gary Pop. And then, like I said, we talked before we started the interview, my uncle's a retired assistant police chief. So we've definitely been involved in the community and, you know, both sides, large Catholic families, and we're here. I mean, no, I think of the 11 brothers and sisters my dad has, only one of them lives out of Indiana. And I think really only one lives out of, the other one lives in New Albany, which makes him, you know, the black sheep.
exactly. So if you weren't a firefighter, what do you think you would be doing?
Definitely something construction related. Something, you know, maybe some type of large construction project foreman or, you know, I've always liked and got along with the blue collar crowd. It was, you know, my roommates from IU went into investment banking and did a lot of the white collar stuff, but I've just always liked genuine people doing I guess just down to earth people, you know. We have guys that have, you know, side businesses and do very well for themselves. We got guys that, you know, live modest lifestyles and you know, stay within their means and enjoy our days off.
Right.
You know, and that's kind of where I try to fall and you know, live within our means. When our kids were born, my wife was a teacher, and we just realized how hectic with our schedule. I don't think people understand. She is a single mom, 10, 11 days a month.
Yep.
That's without a day of overtime. You know, so she stopped teaching, and she's just the school bus driver. I mean, the amount of things that she's asked to do is incredible. So I always tell the new guys, you know, who are single, I'm like, I just want to give you a little bit of advice. Find someone that allows you to love this place and doesn't make you feel guilty for going to work and who is very independent. Because some guys can have a real miserable day if they got to be on the phone with their wife who's mad that she had to take off work because the kid's sick, or I mean, it's just endless. So my
know
wife,
what you're getting into.
My wife allows me to make this job, like, I get to love it, you know.
Mm-hmm. What are some of the challenges of your job?
The schedule, like being away, you know. My dad would miss birthdays and things like that. Now I know I'm getting emotional about it.
It's okay. This is real. This is, I mean, we want everybody to know what it's really like.
I think it's really not, I'm just going to pause for a second.
Fine.
I don't even know why. It's really not that bad. Like, it's really...
I've never made anybody cry.
You just live a different schedule than everybody else. So, when you... like, if one of your buddies that works a 9-to-5 or something, they're like, hey, can you meet me here? Do this, do that. You're like, I just miss my family the whole day before. So it's not that I don't like want to meet you guys to do this or that, but it's made me a lot more family oriented in a good way. But it is different. And you know, if your dad or I have to work Christmas Day, then your Santa's coming on Christmas Eve, you know. But we've all, like, especially before our kids got in school, we took advantage of our time off during the week when no crowds. I think it's made me, like, especially with COVID, like, I hate crowds now. We've always taken full advantage of the good things of the schedule and kind of overlooked the bad. But, you know, there's times when you just people know that you just got to miss things, you know. Like, oh, hey, we're doing get together here. And it's like, well, I work, you know, so, you know. And everybody else gets off at 4, 5, 6 o'clock.
And like, everybody's off, like, 4th yeah. of July or whatever. Yeah. And you're like, oh,
right.
Sorry, I'm working.
But I grew up with it, knowing the good. So it's not that bad. But it also, I'll be honest, it gives you an excuse to not go to some things that, you know, like, my wife can just tell her friends, like, no, Jeffrey has to work. And nobody really knows our schedules.
And nobody's going to be like, well, can't you just take off? Because they know, like, you can't just easily take off.
We are literally paid to be away from our families.
Right.
I guess is the best, you know. There's days when not much goes on. And then there's days that you don't get to contact your family until in the evening or vice versa. Or you feel torn because you do have a sick kid and, you know, your wife's, like, struggling with a deadline or something that she's got to do. Or just when you are down to work that day, that's 24 hours where you are you're dead to the world when it comes to your family. Now the good thing is when they were little, they'd come by and see me.
I was gonna say, have they lifted those restrictions?
Yeah. Once you get to a certain time in your day and you take care of your business, you basically just fall into, like, okay, we're just on call now.
You're just waiting for
But the schedule is what you make it. You can dread it, and you can talk about how bad it stinks, or you can really take advantage of it. And I think choosing for my wife to step away from teaching let us take full advantage of it. And it didn't become such a pro and con. It was just basically all good. Mm-hmm. You know, go to the zoo on a Tuesday. You got it to yourself. Go to the Charlestown State Park on a Wednesday. It's yours. I mean, so everybody is confined to that weekend. What are we going to do on the weekend? We're not. So I'd say that's the best thing we've done in our marriage and in our, now since we've had
How long have you all been married?
10 years on the 12th.
And she knew what she was getting into.
Yes. And I was very honest. Like, this isn't for everybody. And I'm vested when we got. I think it would be really hard for a husband and wife who were married for him to get into it then.
After,
she met me when I was on the fire department already. But she also kind of, her parents lived out in the country, so she would go stay all night with, when we were married, when I worked a Saturday, she'd go stay all night with her mom and dad. And that was, you know, she didn't, you know, a lot of people get married and they're like, oh, we don't see our daughter anymore. Well, she got to see them, you know, 3 Saturdays in a row if she wanted to. So, and then I would drive up the next morning and hang out. So we've definitely made, and she's made the fire department for me easier than some. And I always love her for that.
Obviously, yeah. So how long does it take to get used to working the 24-hour shifts?
Your whole career. And my job is, the flexibility that I have now has changed things up. But the days can, they can drag on, or they can fly by. It's you never know. You're never going to have the same day at the Jeff Fire Department that you had, you know. You'll never, which I've always liked. I've always tried to really enjoy my 24 hours. Whether it's okay, let's get our cleanup done. Let's get our trucks in order. Make sure everybody's ready to respond in a professional manner, and then take care of our, you know, what are we going to eat for dinner tonight? You know, take care of those things. And then, hey, y'all want to play some euchre? Do you want to play, get a game of basketball going? We, when I was stationed right behind your library here, we'd get together 2 o'clock every day, everybody get their workout stuff on and do a little 30, 45 minute workout. And then we'd sit outside if it was nice just enjoy the camaraderie. I really like getting to know people. And you know, when you get on, people will say, oh, you don't want to work with that guy, you don't want to work with her, you know. And I've always told people, make your own opinion of everybody. And try and find something in common that you're there for 24 hours. It's not a fun place when you just want to hate somebody or not get along with them or have this bad energy. So I've always tried to get along with everybody, find something that you have in common. But I will say that in the last 5-6 years, people are just more private. You know, people can go, like the change of the fire stations. Some of the newer fire stations, everybody has their own bedrooms. So you can get away from people. I've always tried to sit at the kitchen table or the main TV room you know, just make the day go by, whatever that may be. You know, we had some older captains, and we'd go down into Claysburg and open up a fire hydrant for the kids and let them run. I mean, just the smiles that you
the
put on.
The fun stuff.
The fun stuff.
Right.
Yes. That's always rewarding. Yeah. I'd say that's the best way to word that. People love firemen. Not me in general or anything, but when they see a big red truck, it puts a smile on their face. A kid wants to jump up in it, and we carry little plastic helmets in our trucks, and people are happy to see us. You know, most kids grow up with a little, you know, fireman's outfit and
a little fire truck toy,
right? So, and I've always tried to do a good job of, you know, have a really good public interaction when we can. You know, obviously, we're on a scene, and we have to be, you know, a little bit different with our communication. But, you know, when we go to the grocery and there's 3 kids in the parking lot staring at us, grab a couple helmets and make their day, turn
the
lights on for them.
So I know there's no typical day.
Yeah.
But, like, what is something that you do, like, every time you go in? Like,
so every time you go in, you need to make sure you have all your gear ready. So the things that are asked of you. So you get your gear on the truck. You would have a little conversation with the guy that was you're taking his place. He can't go home until you take his spot. So, hey, did anything out of the order? Are we missing anything? Did you all break something on the truck the day before? When you open a compartment, that whatever was there the day before should be there, you know? So just your housekeeping. And then you make sure your air bottle is, your pack will come on, and then your air is full. Your bottle is going to give you anywhere, depending on how big you are, 30 to 45 minutes of working time, you know. So that's our lifeline. I can't go into a heat-filled, toxic environment if I become succumbed to some of the hazards. So I have to have all my things in order and able to help someone. And then, you know, we go over the truck. So you take care of your seat. So
do you have the same seat every time?
You should. So there's vacation schedules and things like that. There's guys that might ride in 2 or 3 different seats. But for the most part, when you come in, you see who's off, and you know what seat to fill. And that's the easiest way to put it. So then once you're taking care of all your specific things in your seat, then you go over the truck. Then you probably come in, have a cup of coffee. Somebody's brought breakfast in. Normally, the crews I've been on, we just kind of rotate. So guys are hey, I'll get breakfast next day. Okay, so I'll get it Saturday or vice versa. But then we normally breakfast, like talk for a minute, and then do general cleanup. So mop the floors, make sure the all the dishes are put away, vacuum the carpets, vacuum the bedroom areas, bathrooms, obviously. If the truck is, they went out the night before and it was a rainstorm or something like that, we'll wash the trucks. That is the sergeant's responsibility, but normally we all jump out there and take care of it. And then it's kind of like, you know, I've had really detailed crews where we have a training schedule for the whole year where you can look ahead and know, oh, September is vehicle extrication, so we're going to get some vehicles brought here to the station, or we're going to go to a lot and cut cars up and simulate car wrecks and different medical packaging within a vehicle. Or we've got...
So you're not just sitting around doing nothing. Like,
no.
People have that misconception. Yeah. Like, oh, they're just sitting in their recliners all day because they're not out.
Right. So we have a schedule and try to follow. You know, we are asked to do 1 to 2 hours of training per day. Now, that gets Saturdays and Sundays, it's optional, but Monday through Friday, you should be knocking something out. Now, with the technology we have, we might watch a YouTube video on something the first day, try to set that scenario up the second day, and then the third day might be a critique of, okay, they did it better than us, or we found out that with our equipment, this is our best way to do it, or our manpower, or we have a network that the city, that the department pays for. It's a basically online training, which is just an abyss of different things to tap into. And we also send guys a lot to outside training. And then when they come back, they are asked to share that knowledge with the department and let us learn from other outlying agencies and things like that. But and then get to your lunch early afternoon, then we kind of start to take care. We've taken care of most of our business, and now it's like, okay, well, let's do a 45 minutes of some type of fitness workout, which is really cool when crews do that. I think that's probably just the best camaraderie builder that you can
have. Well, and that physical fitness is so important to your job.
Right, especially for the longevity. I mean, if you're going to hang out and do this for 30 years, you should take it serious. Because really, when you retire, you want to do something with your life. You know, I mean, everybody talks about, you know, the breakfast table is always like, when I retire, I'm like, when you retire, I don't think you're going to, if you haven't backpacked Europe in your 30s, 40s, or 50s,
you're
I'm
not
going to
do it when you retire.
I don't think you're in your, unless you might surprise the heck out of me, but I don't see that happening.
So is there one call that stands out to you more than others?
I don't think so. I think when someone mentions it, it probably pulls it up out of my memory bank. I have a very good memory when it comes to scenarios or something that I've done. I wouldn't say I've ever laid in bed and thought, you know, a continuing memory of a specific, you know, in the short term, yeah, there's times where we've had, you know, some fatalities and fires, and you know, you kind of lay there like, what if we would have, you know, done this, got there quicker, you know, there's things like that that you think about, but they do, I guess, with as much as you do see, they probably go deeper, deeper, quicker. I remember when I got hired, I was just like, man, I just want to feel like I got a year on where my heart rate's not so high when the initial buzzer goes off. I mean, the buzzer went off and I was like, is it me? I mean, it might have not even been my station that went out, but that heart rate starts to drop, and the probably some of the vividness of the memories probably subside a little bit too. But I don't think that anything really sticks out. Definitely the ones where you've genuinely helped people, I hope that those are the ones that when I'm out of here, you know, that those are the most vivid. But you know, we've helped people, and there's people that, you know, we didn't get there in time.
So you go on all kinds of calls, not just fires.
A lot of trauma, a lot of medical, car wrecks, motorcycle wrecks,
overdoses.
Yes. Overdoses about 6-7 years ago was, I mean, it was just 4 or 5 daily. I was wondering a few weeks ago, like, what has really caused that trend to not subside or
but
go
definitely
away, but
go
definitely
down.
The numbers have changed. Yeah,
because we're not seeing it in here,
right?
Hardly at all anymore. I mean, it used to be like once a week we'd be calling 911 or having to have somebody leave because they were caught doing drugs.
Yes,
or...
absolutely.
So, what are some misconceptions about firefighting? We have so many shows on TV now.
Yeah,
that...
I mean, there is the downtime, and this job is what you make it. You and I could have walked in the same day, and we could both put in 20-year careers, and you could have put forth the best effort every single day, and I didn't have to, and we're still going to get paid the same. I mean, that's the realest answer I could probably give you is, it is what you make it. You can show up with a smile on your face, bring a good attitude to work every day, be fun to work with, genuinely care about the community you're serving, or you can just collect your paycheck and go home. I strived for the first example, and I hope when I walk out of here, I have the same mindset. Because I'm probably halfway through, you know, a little over halfway through my career now, and I love it. You know, when my wife wanted to quit teaching, and she said, you know, it was stressing her out, and this, I said, I don't know how to tell you to go to a job that you don't like, because I like going to work. I like being, you know, around the firehouse. So I want her to find the same. And I hope everybody, you know, has that feeling. I know we don't in our society today, you know, people working crummy jobs for little pay, and I wish everybody got to feel the satisfaction that I get to have. But, you know, you really have to fight to have that approach to it, because there is people that hate coming to work. Yeah, for whatever reason, you know, maybe it's past their time. Maybe they should have left 17, 18.
Or they have issues at home that they're not
exactly
disclosing.
So you get to
not
see, like, what could you really not like about coming in here, helping people? You may not turn a wheel that whole day.
I mean, you work, what, 10 days?
Typically 10 days a month. When we come to a point where, like, we had our biggest hiring wave biggest retirement wave, and now we're waiting on guys to get hired, so we have this just onslaught of extra shifts available until we get the new guys trained, and you really see guys kind of overworked. So, you know, you can't turn down the overtime shift, but when you go to work your regular shift, you're sick of this place.
You're tired.
Yes, which I can relate. I know I've been there. You know, when I got hired and then they hired a big wave behind me, that it was like, gosh, I really don't want to be there Saturday. You know, I want, you know, but you know, they kind of, you can't turn it down.
You get
sometimes.
I mean, yeah, you get
mean,
paid
just,
well.
Yeah,
and...
yeah. I mean, it's an extra shift, mm-hmm. extra pay. So. But I don't remember the original question. You got offhand there. The misconceptions.
The misconceptions.
Yeah, I'd say the misconceptions are just that I don't really have a tangible answer for that.
There's always something going on. Like, I know these
shows.
Yeah,
there is. And so we have a like a CAD system that we can see in our watch room, and you just see the city, or like it's all of Clark County, and it's just domestic disturbance. That, I mean, we get to see the police.
Oh, you see every all the 911 calls, right. And everything. Okay.
Right. So you know we do have downtime. I mean, you really just. It's like just throwing something at the wall and seeing what sticks. I mean, storms, you're going to be out all night. And then we've had heavy storms where we didn't get a call. It's just like, it's weird. Whatever you expect to happen that day,
it doesn't happen. Then you have 4th of July where people's garbage cans are on fire.
Yes.
I saw a lot of those calls coming in.
Yeah, all tons of dumpster fires.
Literal dumpster fires.
Yes. Yes. But as far as misconceptions, you don't go into a burning building and see what...
That's
you can't
what
see anything in a fire.
Everybody has said.
You can't see anything in a fire. They couldn't make a TV show on a real fire because it'd be black. I mean, your face is on the ground and you're crawling through a building and you're feeling with your hands. And if you're not on an air bottle, you would die instantly. And as... rewarding as it is, it's also really sad when you ask somebody if they have renter's insurance as a fire marshal and they say no, and I'm like, it's like $10 a month or something I wish the apartment complexes would just put it into their rent and just have them sign the waiver for to be covered.
Well, we saw all those apartments burned 5-6 years ago now.
Yes.
I mean,
yes.
That was by me. That was
right.
So tragic.
Yes. And fires are just devastating. I mean, to lose their pictures and their, I don't know, that whatever could be in your house right now that could just be gone.
It could not be replaced.
Wet drywall mud and insulation. And to walk through post-fire, that stinks for people.
And that's what you do now for your job,
yes,
right, as
yes.
Fire marshal.
But you still do it when you're online because you're making sure there's no fire extending. I'll commend our department. We've done a really good job in the last 4 or 5 years of covering things up with tarps where the ceiling doesn't fall down on it. We've done good. I mean, we've seen guys carrying... veterans American flags out and their wedding pictures and you know they're just being mindful that someone lived here and their house was just destroyed.
It was somebody's
and,
everything
and if you can bring them a handful of items that they just get to cling to in a hotel until they're put somewhere else it's just to still be a human. Like you asked about the memories, like you know not to just become heartless. Like, yeah, there was a wave of overdoses in the last 7-8 years that were just like, oh my gosh, it's the same person we've Narcaned, you know, and you would hear people saying, well, I mean, how many times are we gonna Narcan? Well, as many times as they call us, because that's our job.
That's your job.
That's our job. And that's what we have to do. So, it is, you just have to always take care of the person that called you. Whether, I think, God forbid you didn't like them or they've gotten you out of bed for 3 straight
weeks.
Whether
you like them or not, you're
you
still going
to
do.
You got a job
to
do. And that's probably the hardest thing to do, but when you really sit back and look at it, there's guys that really do a good job at it.
You have your little ladies that call for everything just because they want to see some firefighters.
Yeah,
we've had
a lady that, I mean, every time the address comes in, you know what it is. But this is a little old lady. She lives alone. She can't get from her bed to her wheelchair. And just your tone with her makes all the difference. She's not the friendliest lady in the world. She doesn't like some of us. I think she's racist. But we're there to serve her.
You're going
to
do your
job. We're
there
to serve her.
Right.
And, you know, we just, we have a key to her house to get in. And I've always known, you know, one day she's not going to call. She's not, I don't know how much more time she can live on her own. She's obviously fighting like hell to stay there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so what if it interrupts your breakfast or whatever? Like, it's
just the humanity of it.
And I said one day, I go, you know, she sits there and probably fights to get in that wheelchair because she would call when she was in between the two. And I mean daily, every day. And she tries her best. She doesn't call until she's damn near giving up. And just to always have that mindset, that's a person.
Because, like, what if it was your grandparents? And your grandma. Or something. Yeah. Right. You know?
Right.
You just got to think of it that way. Like,
yeah. And there's, you know, you get on runs where other first responders aren't acting professional. And, I think now, when you asked about how long I've had on, like, I think I have enough time on now to kind of give my honest opinion to somebody. Like, hey, we don't do that. Like, that's disrespectful. You know, you're in somebody's house, or
why are you laughing or joking about
whatever
this is,
it may be.
Yeah.
And I think some people, that's their coping mechanism.
Yeah, I was gonna say, like,
to be in a
that gallows humor kind
of death investigation or something like that. But you know, and I always said when I was a really young firefighter, I'm like, man, I can't wait till I get the time on where I can just let, like, not walk around and just, you know, shoot from the hip, but hey, let's be a little professional here. Like, this, or you can step outside. We don't need you in here.
Because, I mean, you all have your own coping mechanisms.
Absolutely.
This is a very stressful job.
Yeah.
This is a very, I'm sure, anxiety-producing job. And then you guys have to go on a horrible run and then go back to the firehouse and get ready for
whatever
the next.
Whatever. I mean,
do you feel like the department gives you enough resources if you need to take care of
Absolutely.
Your mental health?
Absolutely. They've sent a number of firefighters away to be educated on, like, we had a run last summer where we, what was that? Can we speak about specific things?
Don't use names,
so
per se.
So we had a run where it was like a mass grave site. I'll just say
the funeral home. We can say the funeral home.
Yeah, and after that run, several firefighters who had been to that training reached out and said, "Hey, are you doing okay? You need anything?"
Were you on that run?
Yes.
The initial run? Because
mm-hmm.
I remember when
yes.
that.
Yeah, and it wasn't. I mean, I don't want to say you've seen one, you've seen them all, but it wasn't something that, like, stuck with me. Like, it is what it is.
The smell may have stuck with you,
yes.
but...
Yeah. So, but reached out very open and just say, hey, what if you need anything? And then 2 weeks to the day, called again. Say, hey, you doing okay? I'm like, hey, we're fine.
Are you okay processing this?
Yeah, just a really good outreach, and that's cool. And we've came a long way, you know, working with a bunch of meatheads.
That's what I was going to say. Like, nothing,
like,
against men, but men are not,
like,
generally...
Even society, people are realizing that, you know, people need to...
it's okay to not be okay.
There's early warning signs on things. And we have hired a lot of very smart people. And they can apply it, or they can, you know, choose to use it for other things outside of the fire department. But we do have some genuine people that the people that they sent are good people.
The ones that should have been.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, if they weren't doing firefighting, they should have been therapists
yes.
or something.
Yeah,
yes.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So I know a lot of firefighters have jobs besides firefighting.
Yes.
Do you?
Yes. I've done construction, poured a lot of concrete, landscaping, try to balance that between being, like, overextending yourself and being like, oh my gosh, as soon as I get from the firehouse, I got to go to Lowe's and pick up lumber to form this concrete, I try and scale it back to, like, friends and family. But then I just started, some firefighters bought a dumpster company, and they hooked up with this large remodel company in Louisville, doing like big additions and bathroom and kitchen remodels. And I basically get 3 or 4 firemen on our off days, and I go over there and run a job site for them. So I meet the remodel company, and we go over what needs to be demoed. So this wall's coming out, and then the guys that own the dumpster company set it all up. They get the dumpster there. We tear out the cabinets. Sometimes some of the stuff goes like Habitat Humanity and stuff like that, salvage what we can. But once again, somebody lives in $1-2 million house over in the east end of Louisville. When 5 off-duty firemen show up, they feel safe. They know that, you know, not – they like when we show up, clean-cut guys, you know, talk, can communicate.
You're not going to do a half-assed job because half-assed you guys don't do that.
And put dust all through their house, steal their jewelry box. Like, it's just been a really good partnership with them, and it's allowed me to set my schedule up where I can kind of not overextend myself, because when I was doing everything on my own, I had to, okay, I gotta go meet this lady, okay, she wants a price, okay, that price is too high, I need to, you know, just all, I just like to show up and go
now
to
you
work.
Just show up and
I just
do
show
it.
Up
yep.
go to work. That's my personality. If I have one good thing in life, it's just I can put my head down and just go to work.
Just do it.
I don't have to think. This job's completely different. It's a lot of my new fire department role is just more emailing and documents and things like that. So I'm getting used to that. But yeah, that's what I bring to the table is if I show up on a fire scene and I know my seat assignment and I know the tools that I carry, I can guarantee you that task is going to get done.
Now, this new position, are you still doing 24-hour shifts?
24 hours, okay. Yes. Yeah. So I do the inspections and things like that, 9 to 5-ish. And then after that, I'm just one of the firefighters that's going to show up. Now, I don't go to the like the single unit medical runs. That's just them. But serious incidents, I show up as a safety officer. So hazmat, a really bad car wreck where you've got multiple units coming. And I kind of take care of accountability. Like, okay, we got, or on a fire scene, we got 3 firefighters in the rear. We've got, and I'm kind of eyes and ears for our battalion chief.
You're just making sure that everybody's where they need to be, everybody's safe.
Yes, safety. Just that's it. Like, am I watching the building? Is there a rapid change in the structure or things like that? I'm kind of the eyes and ears, maybe in the rear for the battalion chief that would be out in the front. So
okay.
We've got, you know, a full view of everything. But it's a great learning experience, getting into it with the amount of time that I have on and kind of that where you've been doing the same thing for 8-10 years and it's like, oh, I'll try something new.
And how long have you had this new position?
About 2 months, 3 months.
So you're still learning
yes.
everything.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Yes.
Okay.
And, I mean, every day I have to call the other fire marshals and be like, hey, somebody called with this question. And, like, I don't even, there's no shame. Like, I'm not going to give you the wrong answer.
If you don't know,
I'm
you don't know.
You the right.
Right. It's okay.
I come from my wealth of knowledge, or lack of wealth of knowledge, but no, it's good.
So what advice would you give anyone that wants to become a firefighter?
Probably where I started from the beginning is your family has to be on board. That's, or stay single. Which is, to each their own. I mean, it's not fun for some guys, you know, that don't have what I've been blessed with. But try to have a real good pace to your career. So we get guys that come on, they want to go to every class. They want to go to Indy and do this and this and this. And you're like, you get all this training up front. And then you're kind of done. So just set a real good pace, you know, because you don't want to be burned out and you're sick, you know. But you still want to know at year 10, I still got things to learn. So then that's kind of what led me to want to take this role is like, this is a good change. You know, maybe I was going through the motions 2 years ago because I had been a sergeant for you know, one of the oldest sergeants on, and I was like, I really didn't want to move up to the next rank because I just didn't. I liked what I was doing,
right.
but was I getting complacent? I guess is the best. So just, what are your aspirations? And if your goal is to get right to the top, that's fine. Just know that don't be like a firecracker and fizzle out in the beginning, and then you got 6 years on. You got to get 14 more years out of this. You got to squeeze that out, and you don't like it anymore.
You've already burnt out because
exactly.
Yep.
Yes, I think it was my brother-in-law said, you know, you really just got to set your pace. Mm-hmm. And he even used it on him. Like I'm just trying to set my pace. For this, just
What is your end game?
Yeah,
you know, where do you want to be?
Yeah, I mean, do you want to be chief? Do you want to be, or do you want to stay an Indian the whole rest of your career? You know, do you just want to be a worker, a busy bee? Actually, everybody you talk to is like, man, when I was a firefighter, it was so much fun, you know. And then as you get more roles and responsibilities, I think that's where it weighs on you a little bit more.
So now, could you go back to being online?
Yes.
Like if you don't like this, if this
is
not for you,
okay.
So it's not the end all be all.
No, that
okay.
was the greatest thing about it. It was like, oh, you could take this, and you know, they could take it away from me 2 years from now, and all that training in it. But like, I didn't not like what I was doing.
Right.
I didn't take this because I hated it. I took it because I couldn't pass it up. You know, it's that good of a role. It's that. Especially, you know, with the flexibility of not being confined to the fire station. I mean, that's like a new lease on life. I mean, you know, like telling my wife, like, I forgot my lunch meat. Can you bring me a sandwich or something? Because, I mean, if you need to go anywhere, you got to beg
four guys to go
get on a rig. And then you're like, I'm just going to wait till dinner.
You got to carry all your equipment with
exactly.
you and everything.
Right. Especially when my kids were babies and I'm trying to sneak out and not open a refrigerator door or knock something over. It's like, you know, there's a lot of times where you're like, just digging through your locker looking for peanut butter and jelly. But nobody really minds to go. I mean, nobody's going to let you starve.
No,
but
absolutely
it's just whether
not.
Or not you want to inconvenience somebody.
Whether you want to ask.
Yeah.
Do you have anything else you want to share about your time as a firefighter?
Oh, gosh. That I wish when everybody leaves, they would say, I'll never be able to give the city what the job gave to me.
Well, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks. I don't know if the